Scott for Scots here.
Do you hear that? Bring the mic in close. That's not how the grass should sound. There's weeds everywhere in this lawn. It's time to take action with Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action. It gets three jobs done at once. Kills weeds, prevents crabgrass, and feeds your lawn so it keeps growing strong. Ah, much better.
Get a bag of Scott's Triple Action today. It's guaranteed, or your money back.
Feed your lawn. Feed it.
Roger.
Yeah, I think you're pulling the wrong one. Okay, I'm ready to pull it down now. There was still a little bit left in the...
Okay, don't hold it quite so tight. Okay.
Is that what?
Hi, welcome to the podcast. This is how it's going to start. As long as I can do it for. Hey, everyone, welcome. This is the starting of the podcast. This is Live to Tape, also known as the Executive Buffet, also known as Hands on the Branch. You're here, situated right inside of Daddy's Big Red Truck. Welcome to it. We're going to go swimming outside, except it's going to be in a car. Here you are. Grab Daddy's guitar, throw it in the back of the truck. It's about to erupt. Yeah! Thanks for being here, everybody. Having a wonderful guest who came to us live all the way from New Zealand. Wow. That's hard. That's special. Also, please check us out on Patreon. It's patreon.com/livetotape. That's patreon.com/livetotape. Of extras there, like mixes and special recordings you can't get anywhere else. Also access to merchandise, and that's a real deal. And not just access, but discounts too. That's all I gotta know. Everything else is included inside this podcast, so have a great time. And if you want to, please rate, review, and subscribe. We're pretty much coming out every week. And, Okay. Thanks for being here. This is the Executive Buffet. I am Kevin Tipcorn, also known as Jason Pepperhouse, but better known as Johnny Pemberton. Thanks for listening. Enjoy this wonderful conversation I have with the immensely talented and thoroughly, stunningly interesting Guy Montgomery. Montgomery.
Johnny Pemberton.
You know what I just love is the fact that we're only 4 hours apart, but we're actually almost 24 hours apart. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, because I'm in Auckland, New Zealand, and you are in... What are you in?
I'm in Los Angeles, California.
That is classic Johnny.
Yeah, it's classic me. It's kind of similar to... I mean, it's not, maybe the beach is kind of similar to New Zealand, right? But I've only been in New Zealand once, and I thought, like, this is kind of like if California was better.
Oh, that's so sweet. Do you know when I'm in California, or specifically Los Angeles, mm-hmm. I never think of New Zealand.
Not at all.
I think, you guys did it like this.
What about if you're at the beach in California? Do you ever feel like a little bit like New Zealand?
I think Portland, Oregon kind of makes me think of New Zealand, which is not really by the beach.
Right.
Anywhere near Los Angeles does not feel like New Zealand.
I guess I'm thinking more like the wild parts of California that I've been to by the coast. When I was in New Zealand, it was like, it reminded me of it, but at the same time, it's also so much different. You guys have such a different vibe.
We do have a different vibe, and it starts with the voice, doesn't it?
It does. You have an accent that's different. It's
Well, to be fair, Johnny, you also have an accent. As long as it's just us, as long as it's just us talking, we could sit here and accuse one another of having accents for hours.
Yeah, we're both in prison together, and we're trying to decide. We both woke up in this weird place. We're like, okay, so are we where you are? Are you where I am? So who's the foreigner? We're in a CIA black site someplace, and who knows? Yeah. We're like in a shipping container, and they have a.
And the only way we're allowed out is if we correctly ascertain if we're in your place or my place.
Right, and we have to do that by thinking about the seasons, thinking about the light and stuff. Because I spent a good amount of time in South Africa a couple years ago, and I was there from March, April, May. I was there through May. I remember in May, waking up one of the last days I was there, seeing the light, thinking like, man, it kind of feels like kind of like Christmas for some reason. I'm getting like a Christmas vibe. And it's just because, the light, the angle of the light and the intensity of the light at the time of the day makes it feel kind of like it's Christmas.
Of course, because that's when they would be getting their Christmassy light, because it would be approaching the winter. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you what really bugs me is here in New Zealand, every year we have Christmas in the summer. Mm-hmm. Without fail, that's when we have Christmas, because that's when summer is. And yet, all of our marketing materials are themed around winter.
Man.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's because you just can't get away from the Charles Dickens reality of Christmas. I think that's what it is. It's just Dickens.
Maybe you could draw a line over time from our Christmas decals to Charles Dickens. But I think it's the overwhelming impact of your guys' marketing. You guys are like, Christmas is a winter thing. And we're like, wow, if they said it.
Well, I think we took all the ideas from Dickens. We took the style from Dickens, and the American marketing machine was like, let's fucking go with this. Because the Americans were like the ultimate at marketing. Like, because we don't have any scruples at all. Americans have no scruples whatsoever. So there's no like, there's no person. There's always laws in America that only got passed recently. Like, hey, you can't sell that to children. You can't, like, why not? They want to buy it. It's like they want to buy it because you're tricking them into wanting to buy it. Like, well, we're not making them buy it.
I'm with those people. It sounds discriminatory towards children to only market them certain products. Last I checked, this is a free market.
It is a free market. A child should want to be, even though a child can't buy cigarettes legally, they should be allowed to want to buy cigarettes.
Like, they absolutely should be able to want to buy cigarettes. And that's why they should still be in the movies.
Are they out of the movies now? Cigarettes?
They're not in the movies like they were. It's like a quiet phase out, you know?
Oh, really? It used to be cigarette brands, or now is it just less smoking in movies in general?
Less smoking in movies. Like, it used to be someone was smoking in a movie, you wouldn't think twice about it. Or if you were to think twice, you'd think, God damn, that looks good.
Yeah.
And I don't even smoke. I never smoked. But then now, if you see someone smoking a cigarette in a movie, you think, oh, man, they're going to get sick. They're going to get so sick.
Man, I still like I smoke like very rarely, like once a week at the most. And I see that cigarette in a movie. I'm like, ooh, I want to have one of those cigarettes. Because it's not so much the cigarette. You want to have like that experience. You want to be in that chilled out sort of environment.
I like that relationship to smoking. I think that smoking a cigarette once a week is almost the coolest thing you can do.
It's really strange. I don't know how I'm able to do it, but I just do.
Well, this is why vaping is a slippery slope, because smoking a cigarette, it's still an event. You got to go outside. You got to light the cigarette on fire.
Right.
The cigarette has a very clear expiry. But a vape, there's no sense of pomp or ceremony to it. It's just in your pocket. You think, oh, God damn, I'd love to suck in, you know, a puff of watermelon right now. Bang, you're on.
Yeah.
And then it's just, you know, that just becomes part of the fabric of your life. You can have a puff of watermelon whenever you want. They put up a sign. They say, don't have any of your watermelon here. It's a movie theater. And you'll say, well, I can have my watermelon when I so damn please. And you blow it into your shirt.
It's so innocuous. You can have it any time. And there's, it's like you probably got, like 1,000 puffs in there. So, and you don't, you can't distinguish puff 2 from puff 99.
No, you got no idea.
There's no, I never thought about
that.
When I was
over in the States and I got a weed vape, it's like, if you have a weed vape, then all of a sudden you're just stoned constantly. Whereas if you're not vaping your weed, you're like, I know when I'm stoned and when I'm not stoned, but the line gets very blurred.
Yeah, did you
enjoy
that?
And that's good for it's good for a day or two, but I think too much more than that, you're losing grip on when you're meant to be applying yourself.
See, I use the weed vape like it's I'm trying to think, like I'm drilling a hole in something where it's like, okay, I'm about to drill this hole, ready? And I can only do it once. Like, I'm very careful with it. Like, anytime I have a vape, I almost always underdo it because I'm so scared of getting... Because I've had so many times where I'm like, someone's like, here, take a little puff. I go, next thing I know, I'm like, oh, and I'm just got smacked with this massive cloud of... Like, I can't feel the smoke. Next thing I know, I'm exhaling like this, you know, like I just opened up an oven door or something like that. And
I've done that too. It's such a bad feeling. It's so interesting how different the feeling of being perfectly stoned is to being too stoned, and how fine that line is. And when you cross it, it's like all of the muscles inside you are tense, and your heart's like not beating. It's just paused. Like, what the fuck's going on? That's a terrible feeling.
Is it not legal in New Zealand?
No, we had a big referendum at our last election. Everyone in the country got to vote on whether or not we should legalize pot. And I think it was like 52%, our nation is 52% nerds to 48% legends.
Wow.
So we came second.
That was so close. I bet next time you do it, it'll pass.
I know, but it's one of these things where after they do the referendum, they're like, all right, that's that conversation for 10 years. And then now we just wait 10 years. People are saying, oh, we should decriminalize it. And then the people who voted, the nerds, are all going, no, remember we had that vote? Right? We weren't even voting on decriminalizing. We were voting on legalizing. These are different things. But the nerds, man, they just love, they love power,
nerds.
And they love stipulating things. They love
nerds
to stipulate.
Love. Yeah, some of that referendum shit always bugs me because it feels like a thing where you're basically just asking people something that you asking people someone's opinion whose opinion doesn't matter.
Yes.
It's like asking a stranger, like,
infuriating.
Yeah.
Is at the same election we had a referendum on euthanasia, and the same people who voted against legalizing weed voted for euthanasia. I mean, some people voted for both, but in essence, like, you know the people who are voting that they that young people can't smoke weed. They were all the old people. And then all these old people were like, I tell you what, though, if I get really sick, I want to be able to die on my terms.
Die on my terms.
You're
going
to be around to see us smoking our weed.
God. That is kind of a strange contradiction, I guess. That, what is there, like, do you think there's like a national, so I feel like every country has sort of like a vibe, you know, in terms, at least I feel like I could properly describe America's vibe. But I feel like I don't quite understand what New Zealand's vibe is. Because I feel like I kind of get Australia a bit. But I don't
fully... Describe Australia for me.
Okay. Well, I feel like it's like... this almost seems hard to describe. I think a lot of times with the vibe of a country, it can only be described by the person who grew up there or lives there. Because in a way, you kind of have to talk some shit. You have to be like... Well, I'll start with America. America, like, when it comes down to it, you know how we have the most COVID?
Mm.
I think the reason we had the most COVID is we were always going to have the most COVID, because when it comes down to it, Americans really just don't give a fuck about anything except being able to do what they want to do. And, like, it doesn't matter if it's, like, so going to help everyone else. When it comes down to it, it's kind of like, you know what I would say is we're stubborn. We're super stubborn in the way where it's really good. Like, if you tell an American, like, you guys can't build a bridge across that. It's too wide. We'll be like, we're going to fucking build a goddamn bridge across that shit. Watch us.
Even if it's not what you wanted to do when you woke up that morning.
Exactly. Just because we're so fucking stubborn, because we're like, you know, because America's kind of a nation of assholes who... They're like, they're going to get what they want, even if it means killing a ton of people, like whatever it takes. Like, we've done so many terrible things, but it's all in the name of, you know what? I can fucking do that. Like, you think I can't? Well, watch me. And I think that's the same thing with COBA. That's why no matter what, we're always going to have the most, because we just, even though we do agree with all each other, it's like we all agree like, yeah, fuck them kind of thing. And that's why I feel like it's the national ethos of America. You know how certain countries like France, you feel like it's always that like a French person, you could pay them all the money in the world, but if it was something ugly, they'd be like, I don't care. It's ugly. Like, I don't care for that, you know? Or if it like represents some sort of form of like it's almost similar to America in that way, but it's more like, it's like the lazy version. It's more like, we would never do that because that would be, I don't know. It's obviously not the truth for everyone in those countries, but you know what I mean? Like, you kind of like with certain big countries like France and America and like Canada, they have like a vibe that you can kind of describe. And I feel like New Zealand's one of those places where, you know, you see a lot of stuff from New Zealand, a lot of movies and stuff. And everyone from New Zealand is so funny. You always see these movies where the people, I don't know what it is about people from New Zealand, they're all just so goddamn funny. And I gotta feel like that's gotta be part of something going on there.
I think our voice gives us a bit of a running start.
It definitely does. It definitely helps.
One of the initial associations with our voice for a lot of people of our era is Flight of the Conchords. And a lot of the stuff those guys were saying, I mean, it's actually funny by design. But then that's the first association that people will draw with the accent, is they'll be like, ah, they're joking. But it sort of goes both ways. When I was in America and I would talk to people and I would say a joke, they just thought I was serious and odd.
Okay.
They'd be like, oh, you know, and if people don't understand when you're telling a joke, then you just either seem like a liar or like unhinged.
Yeah.
But I think there is a certain sort of, the international perception of New Zealand, I think, is there's a lot of hope or responsibility pinned on us as a country. Because we're like, you know, we're small enough that people don't really know what's happening, but big enough that the occasional good news story comes out of here. And so people look at that and they go, oh, wow, I tell you what, that's where we're going to go. And we sort of take pride in, you know, like even though we know that's not the reality, we take pride in that being the perception. The general demeanor here is it's pretty chill. People, like, you know, people don't get all, I think we don't try as hard as like people do in America.
Okay.
In America, well, people are trying so hard. And I think there's probably a greater sense of self-importance or like, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I would say it's totally true. It's harder to be more self-important than American. It's harder to try harder than some Americans. Cause we
and
have then, such like,
is try hard an insult in America?
It is now. It has become one.
In New Zealand, I remember at school, like, being called a tryhard was genuinely one of the deepest insults that someone could hurl at you. And it's such a funny and, like, self-defeating insult. It's like, oh, what's that? You've found something that you care passionately about and you're applying yourself at it? That is humiliating for you because
maybe,
it might not work out. And we would know because we've seen you trying, and that's embarrassing.
Maybe the try hard thing to me, I think the reason it's considered bad is because it's like you're, instead of just kind of like going with the flow and being the thing that you just kind of do effortlessly, it's like you're trying so hard. It's like almost like swimming upstream, where it's like, hey man, why are you swimming upstream? Like, why are you spending all that effort? You're just like working so hard. That's what I think what it is that because I've always heard try hard in video game playing. And I think you call someone a try hard when they're, or you call someone say they're really sweaty because they're trying so hard. And
they're I like that.
Sweaty. Yeah. Yeah. Getting pretty sweaty over there.
Yeah. That's really good.
Cause they're like, they're trying so hard that they're not having fun. I think that's the big thing. It's like, if you're,
I know what you're
means you're not having fun.
I know what you're describing when you say sweaty. Like, I think of when I do stand up comedy and I know it's not, I can tell it's not going badly. My body tells me at the same time as my brain, because I can feel like sweat on my back, and I'm like, oh, this is dark.
Yeah, you feel that drip. I've had a drip a couple times. I'm like, oh my God, my back's sweating so much I can feel it dripping. So I'm like, okay, I can't let any air in my set. I got to keep talking, keep going from one thing to one, one thing to one. Okay, yeah. Oh, this guy over here. Yeah, you know. That's try hard, I feel like. Instead of just being like,
it's because it's like, yeah, man. You want to keep talking so that no one else notices it's going badly.
Right.
You know, and also because if you give your brain a glimpse that it's going badly, then you'll start feeling badly. But if you just keep talking, like you don't even know anything's happening, which is just, it's insane. It's not right.
It doesn't work, really. It just sort of kind of works. Or maybe it fools a casual observer into thinking, oh, I think he's doing good. When actually, like...
Well, that is also part of the American way, though. It's like, it's the appearance of doing well in spite of yourself, where it's like, convincing someone that it's going well, even when it's not, is good enough. Even though you are still going to go home and go to bed and be like, that wasn't very good. But so long as the people who saw it thought it was good, then you feel okay about yourself, which just... That's no way to live your life. You are not in charge of your life if that's how you're operating.
Well, that's a lot of people, man. That's a lot of people. Especially, I wonder if it's getting worse, actually, maybe.
Well, yeah. It probably is. I mean...
Because I feel like social media is such a... That's such a big part of social media, you know, is the idea you're presenting something that's... To present a thing because you have control of how it's presented, and so it allows you to be like, look how great the birthday was, look how happy everyone was. What was with the birthday? It was such a great birthday.
Yeah, but
when actually it wasn't.
No one saw like how anxious you were before the birthday. I mean, you can't really take a photo of your anxiety, but I know, you know, like they're not seeing all of the planning or all the bits of the birthday when you and your partner were having a spat. Because, you did more than they did, and they don't see it that way.
Yeah. It's definitely...
So I'm just going to do a little cough off mic. I don't even need to announce that. But just so everyone knows, I'm just doing a little cough.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to Live to Tape. My guest is Guy Montgomery of New Zealand, of Auckland. He just did a cough off mic. We could hear a bit of it, but it's okay. Welcome back.
Hey,
how
thanks,
was that?
Ma'am.
Was it good?
I was good. I feel better for it now. You know, it was just bubbling up at the back of my throat,
I guess. You got to take care of that shit.
You got to get that out.
You still haven't fully nailed down the New Zealand ethos, but I have a theory now I've been thinking about, I didn't say, is that I feel like New Zealand is kind of like the Midwest to me, where, because I think about the Midwest in America, there's a lot of funny people from the Midwest because they're kind of unassuming and they have like, normal lives, but they still they kind of like joke around a lot about stuff.
Yeah,
like nothing super serious, but they also are pretty hard workers.
I will say in New Zealand, like nearly all of the funniest people in New Zealand do not do comedy or do not work in entertainment. Like the funniest people never tried to bottle that and, you know, turn it into a livelihood. They're just incidentally funny, and they keep, you know, they work in HR or at an accountancy firm, and they're just hilarious. Like the funniest friends I can remember, none of them went into comedy. It permeates all conversation, and it's not a joke where it's a very telegraphed punchline in conversation or whatever. It will be an aside, or it will be something which totally deflates a moment.
Do you think that's because people in New Zealand have like a natural kind of like they don't want to bring a lot of attention to themselves? They feel like they have to be kind of humble. Is that sort of it?
Yes. Okay. We have something here called tall poppy syndrome.
Okay. And yeah, I've heard about this.
So this is where if a poppy grows too tall or a person becomes too successful, we want to chop them down to bring them back to our level. And it's like, I mean, to be honest, it exists everywhere, but in New Zealand, it's sort of we cut down poppies very early. Whereas, like, if you think about the cycle of celebrity or success, everyone likes someone at the beginning, and it's very exciting, and you want to champion them and hero them. And in sports, this happens a lot, and it's like, you know, this new exciting new prospect, and then they become really good, and then once someone gets to the top, the fun part is to chop them down, and then they'll get a second term where they have to build themselves all the way up again. And in New Zealand, we do that.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's similar to like a Midwestern thing. It's almost like, Oh, you think you're pretty special, huh? Oh, wow. Oh, we got someone who thinks he's better than everybody.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
And it makes
performing comedy in New Zealand hard, because in America, it's like everyone in the room wants the show to go well. And so you go on stage and like everyone in the room is like, oh God, you know, like there's people are buying into the hype. So they believe in the experience. And here you go on stage and everyone in the audience is like, well, obviously you think you're funny. Go on. And you're like,
God.
I mean, like, don't you want to find this funny? Have you not paid money for this experience? Why are you making the initial part of this contract so challenging?
Wow. I didn't realize that was the case. I mean, I've only performed there one time, and it was a great show, but I'm sure that they afford Americans a different type of thing, right? Because it's like, oh, you're from America,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, because you guys sound like what we believe stand-up comedy is meant to sound like.
Yeah.
As soon as you start talking, we're like, oh, okay, here's a pro.
I found out the internet. And then when you were going there, said, you're just feeling like it's someone you've never seen him. That's the thing. So this guy, this guy going over here? I don't know who this guy is, you know? I would just put on the elbow. It's like, is that just for me or is that for someone else? You remember? Oh, yeah. Just that.
Yeah, and we go, woo!
Woo, woo! God.
We love that.
That's so funny how that's, I don't know why some about that stuff, it interests me so much. Just the idea that like different countries have like these things you kind of, it's hard to describe, but it's there. Sometimes I feel like on the news and stuff, they don't acknowledge that, to where someone wants to really just say like, yeah, you know, it's just, it's because I'm from France and that's why it's this way. It's like, oh, you know, it's just, it's kind of like a New Mexico thing. Like, what do you mean? It's like, you know, we just hate the color blue.
Yeah.
Or some shit like that, where you can't really understand it. It's like, why? But everyone who's from there kind of knows it, but they don't. They know it in a way where it's in their subconscious, even though they act like, oh, no, we don't think that way. But it's like, oh, yeah, I guess I did grow up hearing that 1,000 times a day.
I think it's also part of why, you know, we are largely quite a compliant people. Like, it might be part of why our response, other than the huge advantage afforded by being a lightly populated island nation, is like, when our government said, all right, guys, we're going to go in our houses just for a while, and we're just going to see what that does. Everyone's like, okay, well, you know what? Seems fair. Like, no one wants to stick their head up and be like, nah, fuck you. I want to keep walking around the street. Everyone's like, okay, well, we'll just be in the house, and hopefully that'll work. And that is sort of a community minded approach that, you know, I do feel America is more individualistic, and in that it's like, that is not perceived as, you know, not that happened, but if someone was to say that in America, everyone would be like, well, no, I decide when I'm in and out of my house. That's not your call.
Yeah.
And it marks a difference in response, as we are a more compliant people.
Yeah, it's definitely something where I just love that. I love that that's the case. But at the same time, I wonder, because I always fantasize about moving to New Zealand. Like, let's just say I had to, or I don't know. Part of me was like, would love to live there. But I almost wonder, it'd be at some point after like a year or two where I'd be like, man, I want to be an asshole. And I feel uncomfortable being an asshole here, you know?
You can still be an asshole. I mean,
yeah,
we got assholes, but if you did it, you would especially stand out, because your accent would be like, he was undercover for 2 years, but I knew he was going to be an asshole.
Yeah, he was riding low for a while. I heard that's the same way about Japan. If you're an American in Japan, they give you a pass with all kinds. You can fuck up, do all kinds of the wrong things, whatever. But if you live there, at some point, you're like, oh, you live here? Okay. We're going to hold you to an even higher standard than we hold ourselves. Because it's like, you want to live here, motherfucker? You got to fucking do everything perfect. Otherwise, we're going to call you Gaijin and say that you suck.
But that's not like Americans when they welcome immigrants. Famously, open arms and borders. And they say, come on over, behave as you so choose. We will not judge you.
Yeah, we won't judge you, but we might judge you in all kinds of ways that we're like, what? That's nothing. What do you mean? That's normal. You just have to do that.
Also, Americans sort of live like they got given their life on the default setting. And so anytime they travel or they go anywhere else, they always have to frame it as like what they would be doing or how it is back home. It's like they got given the, you know what I'm saying? It's like they expect the rest of the world to acquiesce to how it is for them. And so if anything is slightly different or if there's a different name for something, then they're like, oh, you know, back home we call it golden sauce or whatever the fuck. And then
I suppose,
you know,
that's true. That's also the Americans.
Yeah, a lot of those guys are the ones that leave the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of them also stay in the country.
A lot of the times, the way Americans are represented outside of America, it's like, oh, it's the worst person. It's the person you'd want least to represent the country that's representing the country. Mm. And it's nothing you can do about it, right? Because it's just, if like maybe one person from America went to this restaurant in this tiny town in the middle of nowhere, then the next 100 Americans that come in are going to be judged by that one person who was like, oh, I thought you could use the, what do you mean I have to pay for that?
And I experienced the inverse when I moved to Toronto, Canada. Mm-hmm. Well, they actually don't pronounce the second T. They like to say Toronto.
Toronto.
Why would you put it in there? But I went over and I on the first day, I printed out my, do you say CV or resume?
I guess you say resume, yeah.
And I went around some cafes and I went into a cafe and the guy was like, oh, you're from New Zealand. Last guy I worked here was from New Zealand. He was great. You got the job. And I was like, holy fuck. This is awesome.
I think that's about right. There's a, you read that book Endurance, the book about the failed expedition to Antarctica, like in 1913 or some shit.
I've not read that.
The head of the expedition is a guy named Ernest Shackleton. And he was like this crazy.
I've heard of Ernest Shackleton.
Yeah, he's a crazy explorer guy. And he used to pick his men. There's one guy, he would interview them for like maybe 5 minutes tops. 5 minutes tops. A guy you're going to be on a boat with for maybe a couple years. 5 minutes. He said he talked to him for maybe like, I don't know, 2 minutes. He's like, he just liked the shape of his nose and he hired him.
I like that. Here's a guy. I mean, the expedition was a total failure, but I do like a guy who operates on vibe alone.
Yeah, but the thing is, it was a total failure, but actually it was an incredible success because the reason it was a failure was not because of the crew. It was because of like something outside of their control. And they were able to survive like something like 670 days in conditions that would kill almost anybody in a week and a half. And
was the thing that was out of their control the weather?
Yeah, the weather and all that stuff like
did
that.
Did they come into a bit of bad weather in Antarctica?
They came into a bit of bad weather in Antarctica and they got stuck.
Oh, yeah.
And they had to go off the boat. It's one of the greatest stories ever told, really.
Yeah, that is. I mean, technically, that's outside of their control. But, you know, you're going on an expedition to Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
The chances are high that you're going to come across a little bit of a squall.
Maybe not a squall, but not just bad weather, but the worst weather.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Oh, this is not just bad weather. This is the worst weather that exists on the planet. It's the coldest,
yeah,
most
it's
wind.
Funny that they'd keep it at the very bottom of the fucking planet.
Yeah.
If only there was some way of knowing. It's crazy,
I just
though,
love
isn't
that
it?
Idea, like, though. The whole divide thing alone, I think that, like, I think that works, though, you know?
I lost you for a second, but I got you back.
I'm saying that I love the idea of just judging someone instantly, being like, yeah, I like this guy. Upon something that you can't really put your finger on, kind of, you know?
That's kind of what we all do. That's what you have to do.
Yeah, I think we all do that for sure. I find that's way with comedy, too. Like, going back to the whole sign of New Zealanders' voices, or a Kiwi's voice, is that, like, you just like, if you like listening to someone's voice, that's all that really matters. You know, if like, there's certain comedians I could listen to them talk for an hour. They could be talking about anything, but I just like the way their voice sounds. And so if they do have jokes, that's just bonus.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And like you also, you'll give people a pass because of their voice or their vibe. You'll be like, but no, their energy seems good. So, you know, it's not like that. They could ever think or say anything that is wholly inappropriate or, you know, offensive.
Yeah.
But then eventually, it's temporary. It can't last forever. You can't skate by and vibe forever. There has to be substance eventually. But those first instincts, like, where did we first meet?
It was probably when you were touring in America. We did a show together, I guess. I think that's probably what it was. Just some random show. I don't know what it was, but it was definitely probably like 4 or 5 years ago, I guess.
And we must have been like, he seems nice. I mean, I was so nervous when I used to go to America because America is Mecca. It's entertainment Mecca.
Right.
And I was some lank outsider, and I assume that everyone there is a superstar and all knowing and powerful. And so I would live in total fear of putting a foot wrong or doing badly on a gig because then I would be ostracized from the entertainment industry because everyone is all powerful. And so I found it very difficult. And if anyone, like, you were friendly towards me, if anyone offered me even a crumb of friendship or decency, I'd think, oh, wow, what a delight. This person's built differently. Because a lot of people, and fair enough, they're living their own lives.
Yeah.
They could give a fuck. They're like, why is a New Zealander here? They are in the way. It's not like they live here. It's not like they can actually make anything of this opportunity.
Yeah, I guess I can see that being the case. I think I probably felt that way at times. But I think for the most part, if I meet a foreigner, I'm just so interested in someone who's from someplace else. Like, oh, so what are you doing here? Why are you here, huh? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Which I still think is the case because I'm kind of like, I only know maybe one other comic from New Zealand, and it seems like that's a pretty bold move to come over here and do comedy. How did you even think to do that in the first place?
Because I have a podcast with my friend Tim called The Worst Idea of All Time that became popular in America. And so the first thing we did was an American tour, and then some people from America became interested in some people who could, you know, glad handle us and blow smoke up our assholes said that they liked us. And so we would sort of be like, oh, wow, I guess we're going to spend some time in America. And then we had to get visas to make a pilot for we adapted our podcast to a video thing. And then I had to pay this extraordinary amount of money for a 3-year working visa in 01. It's called an alien of extraordinary ability. And I was like, well, I got this visa, I might as well have a whack. And so that's when I sort of relocated. But before that, it's just like, you know, it's where all the stuff comes from. It's where you think you want to go.
Yeah, I realize that's the case. But at the same time, there's just very few people I know. I've only met, you know, probably like 5 or 10 comics from other countries who've come over here. Because like you say, it does take, you have to have some reason to come here from the let you to come here. And it's a lot of effort. I think it's not just the effort. I think it's also just, you have to have like a lot of confidence, right? You have to be really bold because you're like, I'm going to go do this. I've performed overseas, but only when it's been a part of a tour that's been put together by someone. I've never been like, I was about to go to England this past summer when COVID happened, but I was going to go to London. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go there and put together some shows. I know enough people now. I can probably get some audience. I have enough notoriety where I can do it. But it was still like a scary prospect to do that, you know?
I think, a little bit of that is removed when you're operating from New Zealand, because if you have any ambition beyond New Zealand, you inevitably have to leave anyway, even if it's just going to Australia.
Okay.
But then you've already experienced your first version of leaving for a bigger market or like a, you know, a bigger, scarier place where you're less known. And then because we're in the Commonwealth,
Right.
We can go over to England and try it out there. And, you know, like, it's still expensive to do, but there's some experience in it's not a totally alien concept. Whereas to Americans, leaving America is like, what? Why would I leave? This is the greatest country in the world.
why am I going to go over to England? The whole point of being here is we got away from here, you know, and it just, it doesn't make the same amount of sense.
That's actually a direct quote from my book, Why Would I Leave Here?
Yeah, I've read it. I've read an advanced copy.
Hold on 1 second. Give me 1 minute here. Sorry, 1 second.
I wonder where Johnny's gone. It's just me now. I say this, I for one love the freewheeling style of this podcast. We started the Zoom call. We had a few words. He said, I'm going to start recording now. And then when we both started recording, he just started the whole thing. This is literally just the conversation.
Oh, were you saying a bunch of stuff just now? A bunch of cool stuff?
It wasn't very cool.
Damn, I can't wait to hear it. It's going to be great. I should have had you take over and do a monologue while I was gone for a second there. Did you, God, what the fuck was I going to ask? Did I tell you that I applied for a, not citizenship. I applied to something in New Zealand during the darkest.
Residency?
Yeah, residency. During the darkest days of the pandemic, I was like, I need to get out of here. And I thought, yeah, like, maybe I could move to New Zealand and be like the next Arj Barker of some sorts, you know?
He's doing that. He does that in Australia, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it's probably easier to move to Australia, isn't it, than New Zealand?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I think there was, you know, we do love to pat ourselves on the back when the rest of the world notices us. And I think there was a news story in the middle of COVID or not long after when it was like search results for can I move to New Zealand have skyrocketed across the globe. And we were sort of like, yeah, as though any of us had anything to do with that.
It's just great place.
But it's how, like, I remember when I used to, the first show I remember running home from school, like racing home from school to watch was Kenan and Kel on Nickelodeon.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I'd be laughing and laughing and slapping my knee. And I remember one episode, it was maybe Chris, the guy who owned the store that Kel worked at. And he said New Zealand. And I was like, it blew my mind. I was like, holy fuck. They know. And then I would have been 13 maybe. And then sometime last year I went to a cinema where they were playing a Heat. You know, Michael
Heat.
Mann movie? That
yeah.
Heat. And it was a cinema full of adults. And there was the line where Robert De Niro talks about maybe moving to New Zealand. And this entire cinema full of adults.
I lost you there.
As soon as he said it, like, started hooping and hollering. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
I was just saying, when I was at the movie Heat, the cinema full of adults.
Damn, this is just, we're far away. We're far apart right now.
I guess we are far apart.
Okay, now you're back.
Now you're back too. Do you edit this or do people just get to hear me stopping and starting?
I think I'll probably be editing this one because of these issues.
These issues. Okay, well, anyway, I was just saying, I was in the cinema full of adults watching Michael Mann's Heat. And when Robert De Niro's character says, I don't know, maybe we'll move to New Zealand. This is like 18 years after the Kenan and Kel experience. The whole cinema erupts in applause and cheers. Like we just won a sports game.
Oh my
God. And I was
God.
Like, we will never outgrow this. Like,
that's funny.
The idea that other countries knowing we exist, you know, makes us swell with pride.
I guess I get that because I'm from like a state that's not super notable. I mean, people know Minnesota. It's not like Missouri or something or South Dakota where there isn't fucking shit going on. But it's still, if someone mentions Minnesota, I'm like, oh, Minnesota. Yes, that's where I'm from.
You've still got that.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah, yeah. It is a good place. Good. Yes. Oh, you've been there. Okay. Oh, cool. Or if you meet somebody from Minnesota, there's like a Minnesota, what's up?
Yeah, it is a bit, it was interesting. It's a bit like abroad, when I was living in New York, say, and I'd meet someone from New Zealand, I would be compelled to talk, to be open towards them and talk to them in a way that in New Zealand, when I meet a stranger, I'm not like, oh my God, we have to talk about this. I'm like, okay, we'll just keep going on our way. There is, I guess it's like, you know, it's you're alien. Or you two have a common ground from which you can discuss what is different about what's around you.
Yeah. I always think of that Onion article from years ago American student studying abroad meets other American student studying abroad. Or something like spends all their time with other students, other American studying abroad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's that thing that's, where, yeah, it doesn't matter where you go.
Universal.
It's just the thing where, oh, similar person. Yes, okay. Mm. I can trust you to some extent.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
so what's
man.
Life been like for you then? Because obviously it's a lot different for you guys over there than it has been for us.
Yeah, we're just chilling out, kicking it old school. We have had a few sort of short, what we call like circuit breaker snap lockdowns.
Okay.
But basically at the start of last year, we went into one big, I think it was 2.5 or 3 month long lockdown where everyone just stayed home. And then we totally eradicated it for a while. So there was no community transmission. COVID-19, all of the positive COVID-19 cases were contained in managed isolation, and they were all people from abroad returning to New Zealand.
Wow.
And so the entire country just became, it just operated as normal. We just had closed borders, but inside of New Zealand, it was just life as you remember. So you could go to a big rock concert, you could go to a sports game, you could put on a show, you could hug a consenting stranger. You could shake hands with an old friend.
Yeah.
And it was like that for a very long time. And then there was another smaller lockdown. But basically the government they treated us like children and it worked really well. They introduced this alert level system where they're like, there's alert levels 1 through 4. And if you're at alert level 4, everyone stay in your house. If you're at alert level 3, everyone stay in your house unless you want to go and buy a coffee, in which case put on a mask and stay the fuck away from everyone and get yourself a coffee. And at alert level 2, it's like, all right, you can go and have a coffee. You can sit in. Just make sure you're doing it with someone you know. And then alert level 1, they're like, we cruising now. And that's sort of what we've been rolling. Like we've had maybe 3 over the whole course of it, 3 or 4. I can't remember the exact number. Lockdowns. But we've been very fortunate, and every time we have to go back into a lockdown, it really highlights like how adaptable humans are, like how quickly you forget the experience of it. Like there's an anxiety now that because we've lived without it in our community for so long, as soon as there's another outbreak, you know, you go into lockdown, it really highlights how tough the rest of the world's been doing it. And you sort of, I spiral. I haven't been responding very well to the lockdowns when we go into them. I'm very compliant.
You shouldn't. You're not supposed to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unnatural. It's like the most unnatural situation for a human. It's really similar to being in prison in a way. I mean, obviously there's terrible things about prison that are different than lockdown, but the idea of the unnatural limitation is something that is, I think it takes a long time to get used to.
Yeah. And I moved back to New Zealand in December 2019, unrelated COVID reasons.
You were living in the USA then?
I was, but I had entered and maintained a long distance relationship with my partner.
In New Zealand.
Who was in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And that's quite a long distance relationship.
Yeah, that's tough.
I'm going to have to say hold on one
moment. Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Are you going to keep talking?
I'll start talking now. The interesting thing about, so I have this large stick that I've, I hold on to sometimes. And we're waiting for a guy. I think he maybe saw a kookaburra or some sort of a large predatory animal outside, and he's checking it out. There's all kinds of crazy ass fucking animals that are out there, and you have to be careful with those because they will injure life in a way that you have no idea what the scenario is. So you got to be careful with those type of predatory animals, because you know you have the echidna. You have the platypus. I don't know.
You're thinking almost entirely of Australia. I had the headphones and I could hear you.
Oh, you son of a bitch. I thought you guys had the echidna there.
No, no, man. We got pathetic. Our animal, we don't got a single natural predator in this country.
Oh, that's right. You have that problem with those possums that live in the tree, right?
Yeah, yeah. Possums are a pest, yeah. But all of our birds, this is how few predators we have. All of our native birds, or the majority, have, through evolution, become flightless because there is so little to fear.
Wow.
Our national bird, the kiwi, is flightless and blind and nocturnal. It's like, this is a bird that, by rights, should be extinguished entirely.
Yeah.
But that's how chilled out the wildlife is. So, but what I was No, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, what I was saying about when I relocated and came back was like, I didn't know that COVID was going to be happening, and I sort of imagined I would still be based out of Auckland but still travel for work. And, you know, but then lockdown happened, and instead of sort of coming back, and because I have a stepdaughter, so instead of coming back and sort of having a similar lifestyle being based out of Auckland, I came back and it was like, no, what you will do is you'll move back to New Zealand and you'll live in a very enclosed domestic setting, and you'll have a child. You'll experience a life that you've not known before, and you'll do all of that and fast forward.
Jeez.
In the most intense environment possible. And it was actually awesome.
Yeah, I've heard from people that those situations, they seem terrible, but then they end up being really great because it's like, I don't know. It makes sense how it can be because it's kind of like a primitive situation for technically kind of a primitive arrangement, you know?
Mm.
Like living in a family way, as they call it.
Living in a family way.
Living in a family
way. I mean, yeah. And it also, like, people would say, do you miss America, or is it hard to leave? And I always think, can you imagine leaving America in December 2019? What an incredible piece of decision-making that would feel like and look like.
Oh, it's the greatest thing you could have possibly done.
It's also removed any opportunity cost from leaving New York, because I look at New York and it's not even the place I was living. You know, like it's,
yeah,
the New York that I've seen for the last year was not the New York that I moved to. You're not living in New York so that you can be confined to your apartment. No one's moving there for the living space.
Nobody is. You live there so you can like meet a weird guy who works at a flower shop and like wants to tell you about Beatles, and it's 4 a.m. and he's sober. Like stuff like that. That's what New York is about. Or like you go to like a restaurant that's like, I don't know. That's to me, I even found myself missing New York, which is, I'm like pretty much a vocal. I talk a lot of shit about New York, but I still love it. You know, I think it's like,
yeah,
such a unique place. Did you watch that show? What is it called? It's the show on HBO about, I can't remember the name of it right now. The World According to John Wilson or something like that. I think it's a...
Oh, How To.
How To, yeah. Because all that stuff is in New York, and I was just so like, man, this shit is... I miss the vibe there so much.
Yeah, yeah. That show is the vibe. That show was crazy. That show was like actually what it's like. Because all the footage is the shit that you see when you're walking around.
It really does capture the vibe of New York in a way where... This is what I like about it, is all these weird people who are kind of nice, but also just, you know, they're just sort of there, and they say stuff in a way that seems normal, but actually they're talking like they're kind of batshit. Something about that. That's like a very specific thing to New York that is just so great that it's, it never gets old.
Mm.
But it's also, I think it's kind of exhausting too. New York can be so exhausting because it's just so much like... It's like a just, it's so much stuff churning all the time, you know?
Yeah, it's, yeah. Well, you're approximate to so many other people's lives in a way that is not normal and is not true of, you know, the majority of other places.
Mm-hmm.
Like in New Zealand, in Auckland, which is our biggest city, I think we've got 1.5 million people here. You're not coming up against... that many other people also living their lives. Like it sort of shatters your simulation a bit over there. Yeah. Obviously we're going to have a conversation now, which I love. And then when we stop the conversation, I'm going to keep going about my day. You're going to keep going. And this is the crazy part to me. You're also going to keep going about your day, even though I'm no longer looking at you.
Right.
And in New York, it's like, it's just this constant wash of people. And you're like, oh, wow. I think it's valuable. I like that feeling of sort of what I do doesn't matter and no one gives a shit.
Yeah,
I find it kind
crying.
Of empowering.
You can be like crying on the street, and it's more like people will be, oh, I need to leave them alone. The thing to do is to just leave them alone, because if they wanted help, they'd ask for help.
Mm.
Like, obviously, if you see someone getting their ass beat, you're going to step in, but sometimes it's just people they're doing their thing in public, and you're just supposed to leave them alone.
Johnny, if I see someone getting their ass beat, you know I'm stepping in. And I tell you what's going to happen then. Someone different is going to be getting their ass beat by
this
guy.
Be you. Oh, I thought you meant like you're the person who's going to get their ass beat instead. It's like, excuse me, can I have my ass beat instead?
Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't you rather beat this taut ass?
Yeah, that'd be a good technique. The guy who steps in, he diffuses fights by like redirecting the blows. Just be like,
yeah,
I'll take it.
Putting my face in the way, or sort of trying to equally antagonize both parties in the fight and going, hey guys, can we find some common ground here, like your shared hatred of me, and then I get my
both
ass
both of
beat.
You smell both of you are terrible, stinky, horrible people.
Smell,
is that why you
it's
moved
funny
to New York?
Tell someone that they smell. Why is that? Why, for the smells?
Yeah, why did you choose New York over Los Angeles? Did you have a choice?
Yeah, I had a choice. I always wanted to live in New York. Like, the marketing was so good. Since I was a boy, I was like, oh, I really want to see what it's like there. And Los Angeles would have made a lot more sense. It would have been a lot easier for me. I actually found it really hard moving. But it never really occurred to me to move to Los Angeles.
Wow.
I think it just doesn't seem... It didn't seem like a place where people like me would live. New York, it's a place where everyone goes to live. But Los Angeles, it's like, I don't know, it didn't appeal in the same way. I mean, which was silly, because I think I would have been a better fit. But
I mean, yes and no. But I do see what you're saying, though. New York does have that vibe where it feels like everyone in the world can live there and does live there. So it's not like it's not a stretch to show up there. Even though we have tons of immigrants here, it feels like more immigrants in Los Angeles are more, it's like more of a family thing. Like, you're going because your family's there. You're going for work because there's an established community you're going to visit. Where New York is like, you can just fucking show up.
It's more individualistic.
And it's gonna suck.
It is going to suck. Unless you've got a huge amount of infrastructure or money,
right?
You can guarantee it's going to suck immediately for a long time.
That's the thing about LA is you can... It's like you're laughing because of that. Your laughter portrays maybe like some facts that were your experience of New York initially.
Yeah, just like, you know, I think... I knew intellectually that was the case, but I didn't know it ethereally. I didn't know it in a way that I was actually experiencing through my soul and body.
So what was your experience then? Was it just like, oh, this place I live is the smallest humanly possible dwelling?
So it was just like, yeah, and it was just, I mean, I arrived to make this, I arrived with a purpose, because we made this pilot that, and I believe in a world first, it didn't actually get picked up for series, but you know, I arrived and I earned some money, and I had work for like 3 months, and I had my friend Tim there, and I was very grounded, and then all of that finished and everyone left, and then there was a real feeling of sort of looking around like, oh, so I'm here now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, it's, you gotta find a place to live, and you gotta, I moved there, I didn't have any work set up apart from that, so I did go and start doing open mics, and I didn't know anyone.
Yeah.
And I hated it immediately.
Wow.
And then, like, some days you'd find an activity you like and you'd have the best day of your life.
was just like the oscillations between, you know, enjoying yourself and think and like doubting everything is so intense, and I hadn't experienced that before.
Oh, really? Okay. So that was New York was the first place you lived when you moved to the United States?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I thought you lived in LA for some reason. I don't know why I thought that. But yeah, I think there's the case. Anytime you move to a new city, especially if it's outside the country, that I think it's got to be at least a year break-in period where...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who say... I used to say to people who would talk to me about Los Angeles who had just moved here, like, man, I don't know. I kind of hate it. And it's like this. I would always say there's two types of people. People who hate LA the first year and people who are lying.
Mm.
Because everyone hates it the first year. They just, because it's so hard to get used to this environment that's like just intense. Like everything. I mean, it's different than New York, but it's essentially the same thing. It's the same thing. You're surrounded by people who are the best at what they do. Everything's super fucking expensive. No one gives a fuck. If you fail, they're like cheer for you. It's like, yes, they fucked up. More room. So it's like that whole thing, it weighs so heavy on your psyche that you have to, it takes like a good year to steel yourself against that vibe and become the person who, I don't even know. I think been too close to it for too long, but I think that's what it is.
So, you know, like when you know, say, you know, these people who you're talking to about moving to LA.
Yeah.
They're friends with you, presumably. Some of them know you.
Yeah, but maybe not so much friends. It's like an acquaintance or someone who's like, hey, I'm thinking about moving there. Or, you know.
Yeah, so I'm
like, well, you
should. You know, like, it's just when you move and you know someone in the place and you're like, well, I've got them.
Yeah.
And you turn to them and you can talk and they'll tell you, yeah, it's hard and, you know, we should have a beer sometime or whatever. But it's like, you're on your own. You're always on your own. Like, sorry, I lost you for a second. Have I got you?
Yeah, I think you were about to say something about you're always on your own, even if you have friends. We're both losing each other.
Okay. No, I got you again.
We're back. Okay.
Yeah, you're on your own. Like, I remember talking to a friend and being like, hey, man, I'm here. I'm finding it hard. And they're like, yeah, it's really hard, huh? All right, well, I got to go. And do this other thing. And I'm like, well, I was kind of hoping that, you know, we could take comfort in one another knowing it's hard. But they've already done the hard part. And now they're enjoying the benefits. And they can bring you along for some of it, but it's not their job. And
yeah,
you gotta get through that little bit. And eventually you enjoy it.
Yeah, I think eventually you do. It's also the thing I always used to say, and I still do, is that the best part about living here is leaving. Because you go someplace else and it's like, man, it's so cool to be someplace that's not where I live. But I do love living there. It's just you go to these other places where essentially they live such carefree lives. You know, you go to someplace else and even though it's not really necessarily carefree, it's just the stakes are so much lower in other places that you get to enjoy that as a visitor.
That's the magic of tourism, right? That's going anywhere. Right. You're not actually experiencing the granular detail and challenge of life. You're just cherry picking what you see. You're living the best version of your life anywhere because you're like, you have no agenda except doing literally whatever it is the fuck you've lined up to do.
Right.
That's why sort of New York, it's why all these major centers are a honey trap because often you'll visit them before you move and you'll have the best week of your life.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, that is not representative of what you're going to move to. That's just you having one of the best weeks of your life in this fantastic city to visit. What on earth would make you think living here is the same thing as visiting here? That is not true of anywhere.
Yeah, unless you... I keep thinking about... I want to get a bumper sticker for my car that says just visiting. Because I keep thinking about a good mentality of life is just to pretend at all times that you're visiting someplace.
Man... This is a holiday. I always have this challenge after a holiday. Well, obviously it's harder now because you can't leave your country.
Right.
But when you go somewhere and you're like, you're so open-minded and the way you experience a city as a tourist is sort of like, it's the ultimate way to live your life because you say yes to so much more than you usually would. You're so much more adventurous. You find like
obscure gigs or restaurants or, you know, like places to go that you would never think to explore. And then at the end of it, I'm always like, God damn, like, what if I brought this energy back to the city I live in and I treated the city I live in? Like, I know that there's stuff going on there with the same sort of joie de vivre. And then I'll come back. And the challenge is, how long can you keep that energy alive before it tapers off and you just go back to your, you know, your mundane little life? And it's like 3 days before you're exhausted and you're like, no, this is not what happens here.
That's the key, is you get it exhausts you to live that way. But I think some of it you can kind of be like, because if you're on vacation and you have a bad meal, you're not going to like get mad at the person and yell at them like, I'm never coming back here. It's because you aren't going to come back there. You're literally not going to come back there. So you just be like, oh, well, you know, I'll pick at it and have what I can eat. And the rest of this, I just won't eat. And that's that. Maybe it's like the idea is you live your life like you're traveling, in the sense that where you don't have any expectations. You just have kind of like, I think it should be interesting because it's new. But if it's bad, it's like, well, I just won't be coming back here.
Yeah. Like, but when I have a bad meal, I just can't help but shout down every server, the chef, you know, the designer who did the typeface outside. I got a real mood on me. I got a short wick, and when it gets lit, there's nothing to do. I just go and try and find a pre-existing fight, stand in between the two people involved, and get them to beat my ass.
I'm here about the restaurant. I don't give a fuck about you. I had a bad experience at Bennigan's, and I want you to beat me so I can feel... Actually, it doesn't quite work, but I don't know. Something's going to happen.
Exactly.
Some result like that. That's funny, man. Yeah, I think I don't know. That's my new idea, at least. Especially now, because once everything's over... I feel like I'm gonna have such a greater appreciation for any experience I have.
I know, but you'll find it lasts for, it's the same thing all over again. It's coming back from holiday. You'll find it lasts for a week, 2 weeks, however long it lasts for, and then you just accept whatever is happening as the new reality.
I don't know. I'm gonna make it last. I'm gonna make it last. I'm gonna do it.
All right.
I'm gonna find a way.
The make it last challenge with Johnny Pemberton.
It's been so long now that I feel like, you know, it's almost like this, where I kind of feel like, you know, I want to go on a bender and have a bunch of drinks and stuff. But at the same time, if I do that, it's going to take away other time. Because, like, if you're on vacation, you don't get blitzed every night because you can't do everything. Well, some people probably do. But it's like the idea where, okay, I'm going to get selectively blitzed.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be careful about the things I choose to do, because it's like, well, I don't want to take away from something else because I went too hard needlessly in this other arena, you know?
Yeah.
I guess that's my thinking
exactly.
Now.
What do you like? You know, when everyone's vaccinated and life has some semblance of the normalcy it was before this pandemic, what are you gonna do? What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to going to like bars and parties and stuff. I'm really looking forward to doing stand up live, any kind of performance live.
Yeah.
That to me is something where it's been really hard to not do that stuff. Cause I you know, you get so much out of it. You realize how much you get out of it, and not just much what you get out of it, but how much you get out of yourself. If you're performing, it's like, it's such a great way to dissipate energy and anxiety and stuff. There's no replacement for it, really.
Yeah. I'm excited for you to have that.
I'm excited for you to be excited, because you've already experienced it. It's like,
I have.
You're like a demigod or someone. You're like, I'm climbing up the mountain and you're already coming down. Like, it's pretty cool up there. You're going to like it. You're going to experience it.
Yeah. I'm the friend who's been in New York for 3 years. He's like, hey, man, you're going to love it. Have a good time. I got to go.
Cool. I've got to take a nap now. Guy, where can people find all your stuff? They just search Guy Montgomery?
Yeah, you can search Guy Montgomery. I use two social media applications, Twitter and Instagram, @guy_mont. And just on the off chance anyone's listening along in New Zealand
and to further rub America's noses in our relative freedom. There's a comedy festival coming up, and I'm doing a show. It's called Guy Montgomery by Name, Guy Montgomery by Nature, and I'd love to see you there.
Awesome. Thanks for being here, Guy. It was fun talking to you, man.
Hey, it was really good catching up with you, Johnny. Yeah, I'm going to... When the world opens up, I do plan that against all of the news you guys insist on pumping out 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I do plan to come back. The marketing machine is in full swing and it's gone awry.
I will definitely be in New Zealand probably before you're here, I bet.
Oh, wow.
I don't know, maybe.
Hell yeah, man.
I really want to go there I really want to go there so bad. I want to go to New Zealand. I'm supposed to do a tour with Duncan Trussell. We're supposed to have done a tour in Australia and New Zealand. It keeps getting pushed back. But when it does happen, my plan is to stay in New Zealand and Australia for a good 2 or 3 weeks after.
Because I just want to fucking... I would love that. We could do all of the things you want to do, but in New Zealand. We could go to a party. We could do it in this order. We could do a show, and then we could go to a bar, and then we could go to a party.
Yes. All those things.
Yeah.
Have some nice Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah. Oh, we got great salve down here, baby.
Oh, believe me. Oh, yeah. I'm a fan.
We could have a buttery Chardonnay.
No, thanks. I want a grassy salve from Marlborough. I know. I've been doing the research. I'm on Google Maps being like, I'm going to go here. I'm going to go here. I can't wait to stop in this place. Oh, yeah. I'm going to get all high and liquored up on their white wine as I look at the coast. That's me.
Yeah, man. Well, we're excited to have you.
Can't wait. Thanks, man. Peace.
See you later, my friend.
Bye-bye.